Okay, hi. I'm here with Kate Ingalls. Ingle? Ingle.
You can say it however you want, Neil.
No, I want to know, do I do the right way?
Well, you can say English, and that's fine.
Okay, well, it looks like English, but it's really a mispronunciation.
Yeah,
And
exactly. Yeah.
I've been so excited to like talk with her. I got her book, The Dread Crew, which you actually promised that you were going to one day sign for me. So you have to like go on tour in the States.
Or you'll have to give me your address and I'll send you a book plate. This is at least the second best thing.
Right. But I should have like kept it in pristine condition. I'm like one of those people who, well, it's good that it has a nice cover.
It does, yeah.
Because
So
I'm one of those people who like, read in bed and then fall asleep on the book.
you're telling me my pirates have Neil drool on them now?
But, usually like the paperback falls apart, but this is like sturdy.
That's right.
Okay, one thing I found in common, or let's, now let me ask you some specific questions.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, one is maybe let's talk about our connection of both of our love for Roald Dahl.
Oh, yes, I love Roald Dahl, and gosh, he's one of those characters that once you start digging into his writing is just has such a dark side and such a dark humor to it, and I always loved it as a kid. But recently I discovered his grown-up writing too. He's written some sort of autobiographical stuff, two books called Boy and then one
Yeah,
called Gone Solo.
boy, I read that's like such a great book.
Yeah, it was a great book. It's been too long since I've read it. I got to pick it up again. But if you liked Boy, you should read Going Solo. That's about his wartime experiences. And I remember it being really great too. But then I went and lent both of those books to somebody, and the rascal didn't bring them back. So I think I'm gonna have to go buy them again.
Now, I bring him up because it was like, as someone who like really loved his books when I was like, I mean, this is like, I was thinking as I was reading this would have been like a book that like, I would have really eaten up when I was like 12 years old, or because and I'm surprised that I mean, you'll see in my post, I sort of made a little joke about how you look and like the writing. Because it really feels like it was written by almost, I know you're gonna like hate this, but like it's sort of a guy. It has a really like boy's life feel to it. Well, I guess you do have kids who are boys, right? So
I do. It's
you
a
live in a house of boys.
I do. No, that's a great compliment, I think. I don't really, I guess there's always been a side of me that's been pretty girly. But there's also, I mean, I can't say I was ever really sort of a very physical kind of a tomboy. I was never really into sports or anything like that. But I don't know. I guess I think about what is girlish and what is boyish. And I think for all of us, all of those lines are so blurred.
That's
Maybe
true.
less, more so for some people and less so for others. But
Right.
I've always tromped around in the woods, and I've never minded. I don't run in the rain. And I walk straight through puddles, and I always have a good pair of shit kicker boots handy. And I don't know if that's because of where I live, because I'm a little bit rural, or if it's because of growing up and not necessarily being athletic, but doing a lot of sailing, and then meeting my husband and doing a lot of trudging up in the mountains and skiing and being active in an adventurous kind of a way. I guess there was always a little bit of a rebellious part of me that didn't want to be too girlish, as much as I love a good pair of jeans and a clicky pair of shoes and makeup and all that stuff. But there's a part of me that just needs to be sort of physically invigorated in a way that I guess some people might not consider girlish, but
Yeah, it could be also. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've seen pictures of where you live, and for most of us, like city folk, you seem to be closer to nature in a way.
Well, we definitely live outside of the city, yeah.
So I mean, so maybe that also sort of makes you more aware of like the dirt and grime and the sound of wood. that, you know, you wouldn't get, you know, growing up in Beverly Hills, where, you know, where like going out to the woods, going to Nordstrom, you know, basically.
I can't even believe that a place called Beverly Hills really exists outside of my TV. Really, like, I laughed because you sent me an email a while back where you said that, or I think it was on Twitter or something, and you said that it was, the book made it sound so exotic where mm-hmm. I am, and that just made me laugh and laugh because I've never seen New York City before. I've never really seen a big American city except for the bits and pieces of Chicago that I saw last summer for Blogger. But I don't know. It's in terms of exoticness, in terms of being close to the outdoors, I mean, we have friends who really do have that big kitchen wood oven and who keep mm-hmm. goats and peacocks and have a big old, you know, 200-year-old barn. And they're sort of back to the landers, and they make, you know, they live on the edge of this huge woodlot and really in the middle of the woods, very, very dense woods. And so that's at least in the peripheral reality of my life, you know, that we know people just down the street who keep their own sort of chickens and geese, and a social night out around here is gathering around an old pot-bellied stove in someone's backyard with a few beer. And so I think probably more so than anything girlish or boyish, it probably is actually, just more maritime.
Exactly. Life. I mean, I know as a professional interviewer, I'm not supposed to be like changing my questions in the middle of the question.
It makes more.
But I think you just changed my mind. It's not really a male-female thing, but almost more like an urban, not urban thing.
Yeah, I think so. And also, this place is just, Nova Scotia is so steeped in history, and there's so much, it's so alive here with heritage and history. And I think that's a big part of it too, is that when you go out into the woods in Nova Scotia, there really are sort of crumbling old British garrisons and cannons in meadows that are just grown over with flowers and stuff. And you can go into old forts that smell like gunpowder and tar. And it really is all like that. And, you know, they really did used to hang pirates in Halifax Harbor. And so a lot of that has to, you know, it informs how we live out here for sure.
Right. I mean, now that I'm thinking that I'm also, you know, besides being, you know, interviewing you, it's like you're my friend and I want people to buy this book.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it sound like girls won't like it. I'm just sending, like, as I read it, it really connected to me as like, you know, like a boyish.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, that doesn't mean like if I was a girl, I wouldn't, you know, like it.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I think that's mm-hmm. true. I think it's just very sort of rollicking and muddy.
Right. I mean, I'm not gonna I'm not gonna embarrass myself in saying what books I read, you know, that I actually liked Nancy Drew better than the Hardy Boys.
There
that's another story.
But you may have had ulterior motives for liking Nancy Drew.
Hardy Boys were like really boring to me for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but it does bring up another, you know, you're mentioning that this is, you know, specifically, you know, it's a Canadian publisher, and you really, there's like a feeling in there that you really have a great sense of placed in your writing. I mean, your writing is so descriptive, it's particularly about, you know, nature. I mean, it's something that I'm like envious of, because it's like I basically like walk around and like past the trees and, oh, that's a tree, you know, while you could sort of like write about the tree for like a whole page and, you know, how it sounds and feels. And I had like mentioned that after I read the book, I gave it to my mother. Mm-hmm. And I said, like, you know, Mom, you got to read this. Like, you know, first of all, I'm saying, like, I know, you know, the writer, you should really read this. It's a really cool story. And I mentioned, you know, I was sort of joking, but after she came over to me, like after like reading the first few pages, I told her it was a pirate story.
Yeah.
And she came to me and said, like, well, you know, what kind of pirates are these? You know, they're not on the water, you know? So it was like, you know, she took it like, you know, she had a very clear image of like what a pirate was.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's like the fun of it. You know, they're like pirates, you know, but it's like different type of pirates, you know. You know, they're like Canadian pirates, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't make me think that, like, you know, that, you know, perhaps that, you know, have you had anyone question that?
Not directly in that way, but yeah, all the way throughout, because people would approach me about the book and on Facebook, and
everyone's going like, I, you know.
Yeah, everyone's like, our matey, and you know, and sort of expecting a certain aesthetic to follow with a, mm-hmm. with what I would call that this is a pirate story,
right.
And mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh God, they don't talk like that. They don't talk like they're from Cornwall, England, and they just don't. It's not Johnny Depp, and I started writing it before the whole friggin' mm-hmm. Pirates of the Disney thing sort of exploded. And after that happened, I was just like, God damn it, I'm writing this book about pirates. And you know, it's all of a sudden now, I was worried about it seeming really contrived, like, oh, pirates are popular, I'll write about pirates. But it never, mm-hmm. never intended it that way. But I always like to imagine that it's like pirates, the Johnny Depp type pirate really did exist. But in this world that I've written about, it's almost like pirates evolved to become something entirely different.
I personally think that's almost, I mean, now I'm switching my hat to, like, you know, marketing type of person.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that is like, that's a selling point. I mean, in a way, it's like, in a way, it's like the weak point and the selling point.
Right.
Because I could see, you know, like, you know, if you had like a 10-year-old kid who's like, mm-hmm. you know, mom brings home a pirate book and they open it up and it's like, what kind of pirates are these? You know, they might need like some, you know, mom to explain it. This is like, you know, these are like really like, you know, different pirates or something like that. But on the other hand, once people understand that what it is, that's what makes them like really unique. And, you know, I'm almost like, I already, you know, I could already see it being like sold that way, that these are like a band of pirates.
Yeah, hopefully.
Right. I mean, like the ship, the wood ship. Well, I don't know. I'm supposed to be like giving away, you know, plot things, but like the ship they have is like very unique, and that's what like makes it special, you know.
Yeah, I remember when Sidney first drew the Barrow. He drew it really quite literally, like a tall ship on wheels, and I was like, no. It's got to be like a big friggin' tank, you know.
Uh-huh.
It can't be something that people invented with the typical pirate aesthetic in mind. They invented it because they needed it to operate properly in a forest. And that's the case with all of the pirate crews that are mentioned in the book, because as you would have seen, there's an international union and every pirate crew is completely different. And
mm-hmm.
none of them have sort of, you know, a double-masted schooner or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
they all have you know, one of them is an aviating crew, another one is a locomotive crew, and so it's more a matter of it's more a story of how piracy kind of had to evolve.
Right, that was cool, and that they even like have unions, you know.
Oh yeah, but secret.
I mean, I love the fact that you really like the details of this like imaginary world, like, and rules, and like, you know, it followed through, you know.
Yeah, and bureaucracy too.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to make it as believable as I could, so you know, if an organization like that really existed with a mandate like that to collect junk, they mm-hmm. would have to be pretty well organized, and they would have to kind of look after their guys, and you know, if there was a New York City crew, they would steal real garbage trucks.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they have to adapt to their setting, mm-hmm. obviously. And I don't know, but I at the same time, I never really contrived to, I never sort of started telling the story thinking I'm going to do a pirate story, but with a twist.
You know? I mean, I like writing also. So it's like, I really feel uncomfortable asking these questions because mm-hmm. I know sometimes things don't really, you know. I mean, I was gonna ask you, and you wanted to talk about it, is like whether the environmental aspect of it was like conscious or just sort of like came out in the story, because
conscious. None of it really was. It was really, I mean, I sort of thought of it afterwards and was mm-hmm. like, yeah, I guess that is kind of an angle of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't intentional, really. I just felt like they had to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of it just, I felt like I was a little bit of a medium when I was writing. I felt like they were really telling me what they wanted to happen, and they were guiding me, and I just had to try and be quiet so I could listen.